This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A one-room schoolhouse. One teacher, older students helping the younger ones. That was how many Americans were educated in the 19th and early 20th centuries. And Bridge writer Mike Wilkinson's discovered the one-room schoolhouse is not extinct in Michigan. His story for Bridge magazine is Michigan's one-room schoolhouses make one last stand. Mike, how does it work and how well does it work? How many one-room schoolhouses are still operating?
Well, about a century ago, there were more than 200,000, and it was a necessity of travel and distance that we had the kids put in these small schools, many in farming communities. But now we're fewer than 400, and in Michigan, there are 23, but 16 in the Lower Peninsula. And what's interesting about the ones in the Lower Peninsula is they are in areas where these kids have other options. Because of schools of choice, because of buses, because of distances, they could easily go to much larger districts that are only a few miles away.
So people with options are choosing these one-room schools for, I think your story said 488 students are going in the Lower Peninsula. So these parents want their kids in this intimate old school setting because?
Well, they find that, you know, there's a community there that they have a connection both among, I would presume, the parents themselves, but between the teacher and the parents, the students themselves have a connection. And everyone in these communities is aware of them. But when I first discovered that there were so many of them, I was fascinated. I wondered why anyone would choose it. But then when I go up there, you kind of see the value. You see the eighth grader sitting next to the first grader and the relationship that they have beyond being siblings, perhaps, being, you know, the peer leader. And it's kind of fascinating. And some of the rewards of the schools probably aren't going to show up on standardized testing, but you know, you can see it, you know, as soon as you walk into them.
Well, you went to the Eccles School in the Thumb to see how it works. Give us an idea. What's a day like?
Well, the day, it starts like any other day. You know, the kids all come in, put their backpacks away. They get the stuff that they need to get. They sit down. But instantly, the differences are right there in front of you. You know, you have, like I said, this one girl. She was eighth grade. Her first grade sister sat next to her. And the desks are different sizes because they're adjustable. And they have to be when you have, you know, a kindergartner and an eighth grader in the same classroom. You know, but they all do the Pledge of Allegiance. They immediately do what's going on in their lives, a little bit of student news. And then immediately it starts at about 8:10, 8:15, where the teacher takes one kid or three kids, depending on how many are in a grade, at her desk and gives them specific individualized instruction. What I saw, it was, you know, fifth grade math for 10 minutes. And while that girl was doing fifth grade math, the second graders went off and there was an aide. Most of these schools have full-time aides, you know, did reading in another room. One girl was working on homework, another was reading. And it's just this silent orchestra of activity. I mean, I shouldn't use the word orchestra because that means there's noise, but there wasn't. It was silent, and everyone's moving in these pieces and in segments that are aligned to what the teacher's going to do next. So the fifth grade girl's done, then here comes the eighth grade girl, then the fourth grade boys, and it was kind of fascinating.
Well, it would absolutely seem to me, after reading your story in Bridge, Mike Wilkinson, these teachers should be wearing Superman capes, because you note in your story one teacher may have to prepare for 16 different subject or grade levels in a given day.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, could this be replicated everywhere? I mean, I don't think, I talked to one teacher at a nearby school that only had 10 kids, and he said coming out of Grand Valley State, you know, they didn't prepare him to be the master of all. I mean, he expected to be a math teacher in a specific grade, and now he finds himself being the math teacher, the English teacher, the social studies, the science teacher. You know, so finding the teachers who can do this, I think, would be difficult. And I think, frankly, I mean, not every teacher has the ability to handle at any one time a kindergartner and an eighth grader. Ann Kennedy at Eccles had an iron grip on that class. And when I asked a couple students about it, I go, how did you know that when she was at the front with one student, and your job was to work on the next thing, and if you needed a question, you asked another one silently, or you get a folder at this point? And she goes, well, that's all we know. I mean, when we were in kindergarten, this is how it operated. And so as they grew into these roles, you know, they saw this is just how it works. It was fascinating.
The choreography.
That's a perfect word for it.
Well, it leads to the obvious question, Mike. Are one-room schoolhouses effectively educating these kids? What'd you find?
That's one of the hardest pieces to the puzzle. Because if you are a parent, let's say you're in Bad Axe, which, you know, is the city closest to Eccles and to Kipper School, which I went to, you can't go to the state's MEEP scores and say, oh, how is Eccles doing? There's too few kids in any one grade for student confidentiality purposes for them to release the statistics. And there's only three kids in fourth grade, for instance. If you say one of them passed the MEEP test, you're basically identifying pretty easily the two who did not. So for obvious reasons, there's not results. So, and those results are very important for the state in terms of its oversight of schools, because that gets you on the state's top to bottom list. And if you fall in the bottom 5%, you can be labeled a priority school, and that is going to trigger some additional state oversight. So they're kind of, they're out of that process. However, I did discover that at the state dashboard, academic dashboard, you can see if you start adding up all students between grades 3rd through 8th, how they're doing in reading proficiency and math proficiency, how they're doing on student growth. And it's a mixed bag. Eccles does well. A number of schools in Huron County do well. But in other parts of the state, maybe they're not doing as well. Maybe they're a little below in third grade reading. But because they're so small, one year they might have 30% passing, and the next year it might be 60, and the difference might be one kid.
I think one way of knowing is how do these kids fare when they move up to high school, the big high schools where they're with everybody else?
Well, I talked to the superintendent in the Ionia schools, and they have three of these one-room schoolhouses in the in Ionia County. And most of the kids come from other districts. They don't live in the one-room school districts. They live in the Ionia City schools. And he said that he's heard from the administrators at the city schools that when the kids leave eighth grade and come there in ninth grade, there are some gaps in their academic success. You know, it makes sense. When, like you mentioned, you have to prepare for 16 things. If the teacher's not particularly good in a particular area, it's not like in the next grade you can get caught up by a new teacher. You have that person for a long time. So in that regard, they're complaining a little bit that there's a problem. However, I talked to a kid who went to Eccles, who was the valedictorian at his school in Harbor Beach, Michigan. And he was one of several kids from Eccles that have gone on there to leadership roles. He's now a major in chemical engineering at the University of Toledo. He has an internship at Dow Chemical. He succeeded, and he said partly because, you know, it taught him to be independent and to be a leader. And he had great examples from his own siblings when they were there.
Mike, knowing that Michigan has, you know, forced consolidation and shut down small, financially struggling districts, are these one-room schools cost-effective?
When you look at the numbers and the, you know, how much they're getting from the state, I mean, they are getting basically the lowest amount per pupil of any districts in the state. They're not in deficit. They do get Title I money that helps kids with reading who come from a lesser income background. It's not costing the state a lot of money. Is it effective? Dollar in, dollar out, it seems to not be ineffective.
Can bigger, more traditional schools learn lessons from these one-room schools?
Well, we see in different places in the country that we're going, you know, more to differentiated learning within the group. I mean, we've seen for a number of years blended learning where you're putting kindergartners, first graders, and second graders in the same group. You're allowing the kids who are excelling to jump ahead and not be stigmatized by, you know, oh, you're so smart, you're in the third grade now. And conversely, you're seeing, you know, the kids who aren't doing as well stay in the same setting and given time to catch up. So there are elements of it that are being adopted and being looked at. I talked to a professor at Fort Lewis College out in Colorado, and he said there are a number of schools who are looking to this for some of the same things that we just talked about. But also beyond the test scores, they're looking at it for the socialization, the leadership, the independence that these schools foster almost automatically.
Mike, I'm wondering why your story for Bridge is titled Michigan's One-Room Schoolhouses Make One Last Stand. Is the future in question for these schools?
As long as the choices is available in the state, and I don't see anytime soon that the legislature is going to remove that, you know, these schools will have a chance. They're going to have to prove themselves to parents, because that's what's making these schools, allowing these schools to survive. Most of these schools, you know, 4 and 5 kids in the classroom are from outside of the district. They're coming from Bad Axe. They're coming from Harbor Beach. They're coming from Ionia City. And the parents are driving them out to this setting. So if there suddenly is a disconnect between the parents and these schools, that they don't feel that the value is there, they will wither, because, you know, there aren't enough kids within the districts themselves.
The piece is Michigan's One-Room Schoolhouses Make One Last Stand. Awfully interesting, especially to those like me who didn't know there were any left in Michigan. It's worth going to bridgemi.com and checking out not only Mike Wilkinson's story, but also the series of photos done by photographer Brian Wittes. It really gives you a good sense of just how these schools work and the scope. Mike, it's great talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.